I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, and welcome back to Recall the Midwife. We are three superfans, and each week we watch an episode of Call the Midwife and discuss. This week we are discussing Series 7, Episode 4. I'm Becky.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jen. A reminder that this week's episode deals with aging and disability, substance abuse and addiction, underage pregnancy. So if those are topics you would prefer to skip this time, we understand and hope you join us for the next one. In this week's episode, we meet Mumtaz and Sadiq. They own a clothing business in Poplar, but are originally from India, and their relationship is the product of an arranged marriage. When Sadiq comes home with a young pregnant woman, Mumtaz finds out that when he was last in India, his family had set up a second arranged marriage for him, and the girl is his new wife. Mumtaz is deeply hurt and angry, and especially upset as she has never been able to have her own children. Sister Julianne intervenes and helps Mumtaz process her feelings and open her heart to Parveen, the young mother, to allow a new family unit to grow. Trixie is continuing to struggle with her drinking and has stopped going to her weekly AA meetings. When Mrs. Campbell gives birth, her husband offers Trixie a tipple to wet the baby's head, and Trixie accepts. Phyllis finds out about it during a follow-up visit and confronts Trixie. Her intervention and some time with Christopher, just as friends, helps her realize what must be done. Trixie talks to Sister Julianne and is offered a 6-month leave of absence to work on her recovery. Trixie accepts. Last, Sister Monica Joan is struggling, but it's Fred who realizes her problem is her failing eyesight. After much effort from Sister Julianne, Sheila, Dr. Turner, it's determined that Sister Monica Joan needs cataract surgery in both eyes. She is initially resistant, but Fred's wisdom and compassion help change her mind, and she agrees to the surgery, much to everyone's delight. Girls. Okay. Well, this one was a doozy, but I'm going to start off on like a very, very, very light note. So okay. I chatted with you guys a little bit before we started recording, but I have to tell the listeners. So this is Sunday for us, obviously. And because of the time difference, you guys are in the evening part of the day and I'm kind of in the midday afternoon part of the day. So in an effort to try to be on my game today and getting the things done that I need to get done, I decided I was going to go grocery shopping for the week before we recorded. Well, I just got
also
back from the grocery.
Just one thing just to say. This is how committed we are to our podcast. We're not watching the brand new series when it's actually on because we're recording together. So we actually get this time to record this. So just so you know, we're sacrificing that. We will watch it later on. You know, that's fine.
Yeah, we'll watch this.
Yeah, but that's not the point. We're not watching it live. So carry on, Jen.
Exactly. So I'm at the grocery store, you know, just meandering down the international aisle, as we like to call it. And I look down and my eyes just were like, what am I seeing here? So I picked it up I bought it. I come home. I made a little thing for myself. I sent a photo to the girls. Barley water. I found barley water.
Yeah, but both of us were like, hang on, that's orange flavor. What is that? It's like a weird mixture between orange squash and barley water.
And it is kind of a weird mixture. So here's the thing. You have to have a kind of a ratio of like squash to water when you make this beverage. And so I did the ratio and I was very careful that I kind of did a 4 parts to 1 part kind of a thing and put ice and everything like that. And I had my first taste and I was like, And I will say, so the orange I think really helps, because I have to admit, if this was probably like original barley water, I would be like, I don't like this. But it's an interesting strain, but it's kind of strange drink. It doesn't taste bad, but it tastes weird.
Nice.
Yeah, it doesn't taste like horrible, but it's just also like kind of strange. And when I looked on the ingredient list, there's literally barley flour in this product. Now, I don't know how they do that, but anyways, it's in there. And here's the question I had for you guys, which I actually forgot to mention beforehand. How much do you guys pay for a bottle of squash? Like a Robinson's any flavor squash?
Oh, I never buy it. Like £1.20?
No, it's more than, it's got to be more than that now.
Is it? Oh, see, that's how often I buy it.
I don't know how much it costs, but I reckon it's more than that.
But you wouldn't think it's like £3 for a bottle of squash, right?
Yeah, £3.
About £3?
No, this one here, okay. £1.75. Okay. You can get it around that. Like, this is Robinson's £1.75. So the Barone makes it around £1 something.
Yeah. So anyways, just to say... So the exchange rate to like dollars to pounds is always a little bit more in the pound favor. So I don't know what the exchange rate is right now, but usually it's like, you know.
Yes, I've looked it up. Robinson's is £2 for the size book. Yeah.
So a £1 in US dollars is about $1.50-ish. I'm going to say, like, I don't know what today's exchange rate is, but it's like, let's say it's about that. I paid $7.19 for this bottle of squash. And I literally like looked at the price and I was like, I was like, I don't know if I want to pay $7 for this, but I was like, you know what? Dedication.
Sacrificing your taste buds. Apparently, I think the barley, as I recall, barley water is supposed to be like really refreshing, like quenching your thirst. I don't know if they're thinking of making it thicker.
Do you regret that now, Jen? Spending that much.
You know what? I would do it again, but I'm not gonna do it again, if that makes sense. Like I definitely am happy I bought it once, but I'm not gonna buy it again.
I think I speak for all of our listeners when I say we are grateful for you, for your sacrifice.
Yes.
And we're excited about the fact that you did that and so you're trying it live on the podcast. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I do it all for you guys. And just to say, I put a lot of ice in my drinks, as always. And now that the ice is melting and it's getting a lot colder, it is tasting better. So maybe I just need to put a little bit less in there. Ooh, it has kind of a funny tingling on my tongue right now. Oh, anyways,
there's something weird about it. I know what you mean, though.
I was eating chips and this before we started. And I ate a chip and then I immediately had some of the drink. And then I was like, no. Like, these two things have to be kept kind of separate, because it was giving me like a funky taste from the chip at the end. The drink at the same time. But you know, I love to try new foods that I've never tried before. I'm not a picky eater. I really do just like to try almost anything that looks even mildly appealing. So I'm very glad I tried it. And I will say, I like squash of other flavors, like, you know, like a fruit punch, black currant, you know, blah blah blah. There's lots of flavors that I love. This one is just not my favorite.
Speaking about different flavors, I've shared it on our stories today on Instagram, but Lucy Besh Designs sent us it looks amazing, to be fair. I can't eat it, but it's Fluffernutter bars, the recipe to make them.
They look... I saw this on my social media.
Wait a minute. Probably
did, because I shared it from Recall the Midwife.
Is that on our Instagram right now?
Yeah. I saw someone making it on TikTok.
Oh, really? Oh,
wait a minute.
And it's obviously because my phone listened to us record the podcast.
Yeah. And also,
oh my God, I am going to make these.
To the podcast as well, won't you,
Bert? Oh my gosh. Wait, I'm going back.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Lucy Besh. I've actually I've done a thank you to her on our Instagram. But me and
I'm
so excited about making that. So
Oh my god. Lucy. Oh, you are a genius. Oh, I'm making this. I still have some fluff left over from our Fluffernutter episode.
I'm so weird.
How much do you need? Oh, you need a whole jar. Well, I'm borrowing another jar then. I'm making this.
It does look amazing, to be fair. I won't be able to eat it, but yeah. Anyway, should we get on with the actual episode?
Okay, wait.
Yeah, and before we start, was anybody in their notes? Was anybody going to discuss the Russian cosmonaut?
I mentioned it, not a name.
I was going to just mention it, but I don't have any other thing about it. Why?
Well, I thought I'll look her up and have a few facts. And then just read that she voted, because she became a politician, she voted for the invasion of Ukraine. So I think we should just not discuss her again.
Yeah, okay, maybe, yes, I agree. Although, coincidence, after I watched Called the Midwife this morning, I started watching Apollo 13 on Netflix, so I don't know. Maybe she secretly influenced me. I don't know.
But I think not. Now, the first scene on this today was a very, very pregnant Trixie. Do you notice how pregnant she looked?
Yes. Yeah. She literally looked like 6 months pregnant. Like, there was no hiding it.
She looked about flaming 8 months.
Well, and what was wild was there's later scenes where she's like reading the newspaper with a pillow over her tummy, as if that's like a thing normal people do. And it's like, guys, the jig is up, okay? Like, we've literally seen full body shots of this woman. Like, there's no loose top. Like, did you see? I actually did write down my notes. Did you see the white and red striped nightgown?
Because
this was the most un-Trixie-like garment you've ever seen. Like, literally every episode she's in skin tight outfits, like, and then she's all of a sudden wearing this very voluminous nightgown and then this very voluminous white shirt when Phyllis comes in to talk to her and like other things like that. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you guys, she's so obviously preguntus. Like,
just going back to the first female in space. It made me absolutely lol when Val was saying that she remembers her gran telling her that there were stones being thrown at the first female bus conductor and now there's a woman in space. It's like, where were you? Like, what is going on in Poplar? Stones being thrown at a female bus conductor.
Oh my God. I mean, it's like, that's the most innocuous thing too. Like, can you imagine people being angry that a woman's driving a bus? Like,
oh no, bus conductor is someone who just collects their money and tickets.
Yeah, they're just, yeah.
Oh, it's not even the bus driver.
No.
Oh, for God's sakes. Somehow that's even worse. Gee whiz.
Should we start with something lovely and light, like the Garnies?
See, I don't want to talk about the conflict, but what I did want to say, because there's a bit, I literally just said, let's not talk about her. But there was a bit, I don't think we're talking about her, but there's a bit where somebody's been interviewed and a man basically says that he hopes he can send his wife into space. Did you see that? Did you notice that bit?
I missed that one.
And the reason I wanted to mention it, because I remember during COVID, there was, do you remember the Christmas, we went into lockdown and everybody was free to see each other over Christmas. And then all of a sudden we were in lockdown, but you could only see your family on Christmas Day. So anybody who had plans to like travel to family had to cancel because they could only see them on the day. And I just remember this news report where this guy was being interviewed by somebody and the newsreader was basically expecting this guy to be outraged that he couldn't see his family at Christmas. And he was absolutely thrilled because his mother-in-law was coming for Christmas and now she couldn't. Anyway, right, moving on, the Garnies.
Mumtaz is the wife that's been married to Sadiq for many years, and they've got a really successful business together, and just broke my heart.
Absolutely broke my heart. Terrible. Well, should we say what happened? So she's at the business and she makes a pointed comment to one of her employees, like one of the bosses is out doing something and the other boss is right in front of you. So you kind of get the sense right away that they're a very equal partnership.
Yeah.
They have this successful business. Well, anyway, fast forward, it's 5 p.m. She goes home. You know, she's in the kitchen. The husband comes in. She's like, oh, how did it go today? Blah, blah, blah. Talking to him. And then he's like, yeah, it was good. But also, I have something to tell you. There's somebody that's going to be here now. And she's like, what? And so then this young girl walks in, very obviously pregnant, like not Trixie level pregnant, like 9 months pregnant basically. And it's like, okay, who's this? And so
basically, is it a cousin?
Oh, cousin, sure. So she knew she was coming, and so basically he's like, oh, the last time I was in India, like 9 months ago,
Pakistan.
Pakistan. Sorry. Oh, I said India in the intro. We'll go back.
There's how much we've listened to the intro.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You got the name right though, Jen.
I did. So
you can't have it all.
No, you really can't have it all in this life. So anyways, my apologies. I didn't remember that they said that where they were from. So I apologize that I just assumed. But anyways, so he's like, well, I was back there and my family said I needed to take a second wife. And so, well.
Your family agreed. So she's also
your family agreed to it. Nobody consulted either one of us before they kind of made this proclamation. But then I went along with it. I married her and I got her pregnant and now she's going to have a baby. And anyways, so what's for
here
dinner?
She is. She's going to live with us now.
Yeah. And she,
Yeah. She always knew that she was coming to stay, but she just didn't know that they were married and that she was pregnant with her husband's child.
I think he had a bit of time to warn her there, didn't he? Yeah. Not so equal partnership as she thought.
Yes, he had absolutely plenty of time to say something.
There's a lot of things that angered me with this. Firstly, he didn't tell her that he'd taken a second wife.
Yep.
He says that it's not something that he chose. It was kind of thrust upon him. He didn't have to consummate the marriage.
Yep. Absolutely.
And he could have told Mum Taz all of this.
In however many months, yeah.
Yeah, because he's had plenty of time.
So could her family as well. Like, I just find it mental that everyone must either speak on the phone or send letters to each other or what. And everyone's just kept her in the dark. This 15-year-old as well, she's 15.
Oh, when I found out she was 15, I was absolutely, like, I just started spiraling at that point. I was spiraling.
And you not married to him. Like, can you just imagine this poor woman? And she's also, then you've got the fact that they've tried for kids for years and obviously can't have them. She says to Julianne they can't have them. So then she's got this massive slap in the face that her husband, who she's been trying to have kids with, has now having a baby with someone else who's her 15-year-old cousin. This is like something off Jerry Springer.
I just think that is the biggest betrayal, the fact that they've tried to have children. And perhaps that's why his family has said you need to take a second wife, because they've not had children.
Yeah.
So maybe that is what's led to it. But I just think for her, it's just the biggest slap in the face, the fact that he's done this and now they're having a child together.
But also she doesn't know how to feel. She doesn't feel like... She says, our families chose. I cannot blame you. I cannot blame her. And we learn to share everything, but we cannot share this. And it's just... How can she react to this? It's just there's no right way to react to it. She can't just, she'll be blowing her whole life up if she left. You know, she's built this successful business with him as well. It's just this horrible situation.
Well, and they do make a very clear case that Mumtaz and Sadiq are in love. They have a very happy marriage. He's a very good husband. Like they're completely, you know, together on the business and everything.
Well, it gives her a bit of the ick as well, because she's like, when we were young, she was like, I was not barely 15 when I married him, but so was he. I think she's a bit like, it's given her the ick in being like 5 or 15.
And she says that he's twice her age, so they must be early 30s.
Yeah, exactly.
I think older.
Well, I didn't think twice. She says more than twice her age, but I didn't think they were 40. I thought they were like maybe.
Oh, I thought they were about 40.
Oh, no. I didn't get that.
I'm historically terrible at guessing people's age. My husband laughs loads. I'm terrible at guessing people's ages.
I was
the
guessing
best thing
more
I realized, I like the awkward moment when Val comes to Parveen in the house to kind of do like, you know, when they come and check the house out for home deliveries and stuff.
Yeah,
so Val does that. And there's just the most awkward moment where she's talking about her mom and her family and all this kind of stuff. And she's like, oh, in that photo, like that's your cousin. Yeah. And her husband. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, and what about your husband in that photo? Oh, no, sorry. No, that's your cousin's husband. I meant your husband. That's the one. She's like, oh.
She's like, you know what? I'm just going to call Sister Julianne because I am way unqualified for this case. So I'm going to get my supervisor to come in here. And you won't be seeing me again. But anyways, it's been really nice interviewing you. And thank you so much for letting me in your home.
So awkward.
God, yeah. Oh, bless. Yeah. Well, and when Sister Julianne is kind of like, hello. Hi, you know, and just, you know, I mean, I'm like, yeah, you need the big guns for something like this because.
Oh, Sister Julianne was so good. She went to see Mumtaz because Mumtaz obviously is struggling loads. And she's like, oh, talking about a home delivery. And she's like, well, it's my home, not bloody hers. She didn't say that. But she kind of was intimating it with her absolute hostility.
Yeah.
And so she booked Parveen to the maternity home to have the baby, which I think is a very wise Sister Julianne decision.
Yeah,
but, absolutely.
Well, when she actually had the baby, was it? But we'll talk about that in a minute. But they had a really heartfelt, raw conversation about it as well. And just, I think that was it. Mumtaz was just so raw with it because she didn't know how to react, but she couldn't really react anyway. There's nothing she could do about it. It's been done.
No. Mm. But I did, she says to Sister Julianne, she'll never come to terms with it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, yes, you hold this.
Hold at the same time. But at the same time, the husband's done this and it's awful for her. But, you know, I'm worried about a baby who's not real. But I'm worried about, this fictional baby in the future. I don't want Mumtaz to take it out on the baby. Do you know what I mean? Living with this baby.
I don't think based on how the story ends, I don't think she will.
Yeah, I hope not.
Oh, I'd like to think that this is their only child and that he doesn't go on to have more children with her. Because once the baby arrives, right, baby. I mean, absolutely, he should be. But I just think
Well, so anyway, so Parveen was really struggling with the birth and she's not doing so great. So Mumtaz went to the birth to help and she was speaking to her. I've forgotten the language. I'm so rubbish. So she was speaking to her.
Punjabi, right?
Yes. So she was like speaking to her and telling her how to do it. And it really did help Parveen because obviously she's also, you've got to think about it from Parveen's perspective. We're actually like, Mumtaz, she's 15. She's pregnant in a completely different country where she doesn't know the language at all. She's, you know, she's having a baby at 15. It must be absolutely terrifying. So I'm really glad Mumtaz was there to help her with the birth.
Girls, just,
awful for everyone.
Just one quick tiny thing. I actually, because I thought about the trigger warnings before we started and the fact that, I mean, so this was where I kind of felt a bit of a, like I was bumping up against, you know, cultural sensitivity because I'm genuinely not sure how much arranged marriage is still a practice in, you know, these countries, but I do want to be respectful of other cultures and everything like that. But I did find it extremely, well, I guess maybe a gentle way to say it is like problematic that this 15-year-old girl was, you know, set up in an arranged marriage with this very, very much, much, much older adult man. Like it was, to me, that was just very outside of what I would consider to be okay.
But I think it was supposed to be jarring. I think they went with quite a extreme version for this, for the storyline.
Yeah, but it just, I mean, like in any other context, like you would use a lot of really like harsh words to describe what happened to this young woman. And none of those were the way that it was in this context, you know, but at the same time, I was just like, what is the fate for this young lady? Like, I mean, she's coming to England. It's a country where she's not from there. She doesn't know that place very well. Like, is she going to stay there? Is she going to go back to her home country? Like, is she going to stay married to this man? I guess she's going to stay married to this man for her whole life, but like, is she going to have a real marriage with him? Like, is he genuinely going to be, quote, married to both of them? Or is it going to be just a ceremonial marriage and then she really doesn't get to have a marriage because she, you know, isn't, I don't know. It just like, it was just very, I really want to respect the culture, but I found it very upsetting and like, for, I don't know. It was a real quagmire in my own head anyway, but.
It very much was.
There's a scene where Dr. Turner's talking to Sadiq and he says to him, Parveen is below the legal age of marriage. And he does say, which annoyed me slightly. He was like, but that doesn't concern me. He was just concerned that she was a young mother. But I just thought, Dr. Turner, she's below the age of consent, never mind marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know how much she even really wanted to get pregnant in the first place, because I mean, like after the baby's born, well, I don't know, maybe we're not there yet.
She's not full of excitement like a first time mum, is she?
Well, no.
Yeah. Well, it's all very new to her, isn't it? So she had a little boy and Mumtaz was there and Mumtaz seemed taken with him at first.
Then
they brought Sadiq in and Sadiq was just looking at him and then he was saying to Parveen, oh, well done. And she just walked off kind of like she felt she had no place there.
Well, wait a minute, though. What he actually says is, he's like, oh, this is so great. You know, like, isn't he so beautiful? And then he says, my son. And then he turns away from Mumtaz towards Parveen and has his back to Mumtaz. And then he said, our son. And then she was like, I'm out of here. Bye-bye. And just like left, and I was like, oh my god, girl, of course she would leave. Like, anyone would. How could you not? Just, that's so heartbreaking. Like, it was so just casually insensitive of him to not think about that in advance. And I just,
but I just think Mumtaz handled it so well given the situation that she was put in.
Yes.
Yeah. He handled it so much better than I would.
Oh my god, yeah, I would not have been that graceful or compassionate or open-hearted. I mean, when Sister Julianne talked to her and then she got Dr. Turner to talk to her and Dr. Turner had this whole thing about he has a really unconventional family, but it's a beautiful family and you can kind of make the family out of what you have, even if it's not like kind of the tradition or whatever like that. And I mean, he was actually very, very good in his kind of conversation with Mumtaz, and Sister Julianne was like, open your heart to her, like blah, blah, blah. Like, they both did amazing work, honestly. And Mumtaz, I mean, God bless her, she like really rose to the occasion. But
it's the way he was like, the miracle was we found a way to accept the situation. We built a family out of several different elements. Yeah, but you didn't bring a 15-year-old pregnant home that you hadn't told her about. Like, a bit different.
Exactly. Also, with no warning, for God's sakes. I mean, like, literally, Mumtaz had probably like 2 weeks to have this whole emotional evolution, which I'm sorry. I mean, oh my God.
But she did bring food for it, which I thought, because obviously Parveen was struggling after the baby was born, wasn't really connecting with him, didn't really want to. It's kind of like she was kind of rejecting the whole situation.
Yeah.
But there was a bit where, because you said about Dr. Turner saying that they built a family, he actually says from several disparate elements. And yeah. I was really outraged because I was like, Timothy is not a disparate element. And then I looked up the actual meaning of disparate, and it just means different, unrelated elements. Things that are.
Yeah, I misheard and thought it was different.
Well, I was really outraged that he would think of Timothy as person like that. But then I was like, oh yeah, that's totally the right word to use. But yeah. Also, we do have to say, we haven't mentioned that when Sister Julianne goes to talk to Mum Taz when she's at the factory and she cuts her hand on the sewing machine.
Oh, that was horrible. That was
but
horrible.
We had the Welsh, Sister Julianne makes her a cup of tea, and we had the Welsh sugar
Jackson. Oh, yeah. For Welsh sugared.
Yeah.
Also, my daughter walked in on that scene, you know, when the, of course she did. Of course she did.
She's got the most amazing timing.
And she literally was like, oh, I shouldn't be watching this, Mummy. And I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't.
Why are you here?
Also, can I just say the irony that she's called Mum Taz?
Yeah.
I know. Well, I thought that was kind of, I didn't realize they'd done it on purpose. Yeah, I didn't realize that was her name. I thought that was kind of an affectionate, you know, like auntie, like mother auntie, or, you know, like something in her native language that was a more of a descriptor than like a name actually. But
I do feel that the age gap though is so great that you almost will see her being a mother to Pravin and her son.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to me, I thought, oh, Mum Taz is going to take over as really truly the head of this household and like be the one to kind of, quote, matriarch, raise this child and all that kind of stuff like that. Because Parveen, I mean, even if she does kind of step up to the plate, I mean, she's still 15, for goodness sake.
I did wonder if they were kind of trying to say that Mum Taz's business was her baby. Do you know what I mean? That she's nurtured and...
Oh, she literally said it. She's like, yeah, my business is my child. That's what
well, it wasn't that. It wasn't that... it wasn't that cerebral, what's the word, it wasn't that intimated, it was actually literal, and I just totally took it as my own thought.
Because it's the scene where he comes into their bedroom and she's just like, I'm so mad, I know, da da da, and he's like, we built this together, like we do everything together, like da da da, and she's like, yeah, and
don't
then
get
you...
15 year old girls pregnant together, so
do. Yeah, exactly, that's what she said. She's like, well, we didn't do this together, and then she like throws his hands away and everything. But she said in that portion, she's like, yeah, she's like, the business is our child, and I thought we were both on board with that, and then you went and did this, and you know, like, what the heck. I couldn't believe, I mean, I will say this, like, I was amazed that she wasn't more mad at him. I mean, even understanding the cultural, you know, mores of their situation, I was like, ugh. I'm like, you're letting him off the hook like so much here, come on. I mean,
yeah, but again, you've got to remember, it's not 2023.
I know. I just felt so bad for her.
Same, to be fair.
Ugh. So tough. I mean, ultimately, as happy an ending as you could ask for in terms of them going forward with what it seemed to be, you know, an opportunity to reconcile and make the best of it. So, you know, good on them. But that one left me really sad, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I do hope all it right. Worked out for them, even though it's fictional, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. All right, Bex, what's next?
Did we talk about Loretta Campbell? Because then that leads us into Trixie.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
So Loretta Campbell comes into clinic and she goes behind screen, and then we find her rummaging around in her handbag because she's craving coal.
Well, that's quite a famous one, though, isn't it? Like, you hear about it, like, yeah. Nightmare.
Is that really real? Like, people
get that? Yes, it is. Because it's got a name, and they say it in the Chickpeaker. It's where people crave, they're craving something that's non-food-based. And I've got a list of things that people crave, and it's really, like, some of it. So you can have ice, paper, clay, dirt, soap, chalk, baby powder, ash, cornstarch, uncooked rice and grains. This is the worst one. Hair.
Oh, I don't know.
String. All of them are not good.
Cloth, paint. Yeah, cloth, paint chips, glue, metal and pebbles.
Metal and pebbles, I think they're worse than hair. I think I'd like ice out of all of them, please.
Yeah, ice is fine.
Imagine my craving is actually
a food
ice cream.
Product, babe, basically. Wait, you said ice cream?
Ice cream is my craving.
Wait a minute. Is pica the term for something that's like a craving of a non-food item, though? Like a food craving is a food craving. That's
yeah, yeah.
Fine.
Mine was just a craving. Mine was not pica.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I have pica really bad because I have 8,000 billion food cravings, but apparently I don't. I just have a normal food problem.
I will say, when I was pregnant, I've never known, like, it was like a compulsion. I remember it being in the middle of the night, and I said to John, look, I'm not being funny. I have to have mint chocolate chip ice cream right now. Go and get it. Like, literally. And he was like, we haven't got any in the house. You've eaten it. I'm like, there's a 24-hour garage, mate. Get to it.
Well, like, actually, what's funny about that is I had a friend who knew her for years before she ever got married and had a kid. And then her first pregnancy, and she always did not like ice cream. Like, because, you know, summer we would be hanging out and I'd be like, oh, do you want to get ice cream? And she's like, I don't like ice cream. And I was like, what? And I love ice cream. So, you know, that really stuck out in my mind as like a thing about her. She got pregnant. She was like, you would not believe how much ice cream I'm eating. And I was like, what? And then she was like, yeah, it's just so crazy. And as soon as she gave birth, she didn't want it anymore.
See, I liked it before. Well, it wasn't like my go-to. I'd have chocolate more than ice cream. Uh-huh. But, oh my goodness, since I'd genuinely just, I love Ben and Jerry's or whatever now. Like a vegan Ben and Jerry's, it's delicious.
Yeah.
It stuck with me.
It's just so weird. I mean, that kind of stuff really just makes you feel like, oh my God, like I've been body snatched. Like literally there's an alien that like took over and I'm not even.
Where have you met? I tell you what, actually, she used to go mental whenever I had strawberries, like kick the place down. But I loved strawberries. She loves strawberries. Like when she was in me, like she'd be kicking the place down when I had strawberries.
Really?
And
really?
Now she loves strawberries.
Oh my goodness.
Well, they do say, because Loretta's really concerned that she's craving coal. And she talks about who, I don't know who it was, that she knows somebody who's absolutely craved strawberries during her pregnancy. And then her baby was born with a strawberry mark.
Yeah, like
Yeah. Well, she said during her first pregnancy, she loved
marmalade sandwiches. Like,
she's Paddington. And she was like, I think marmalade's disgusting, but that's all I wanted. But at least it didn't feel shameful to want that.
To be fair, she did look a bit of a knobhead with
coal on
her
face.
Exactly. But my thing with Loretta was, I was like, everyone would know you're eating coal, honey bun, because they're like, anything with coal in it at all or charcoal at all is gonna make it, is so like, it gets on everything. Like her teeth and her mouth would be black if she was eating coal all day long. Yeah. Like there's no way that would be a thing. Also, how do you even get coal now? Like where would you even get it in modern times?
Well, we get it.
People, you still use it.
Yeah, they get the coal man delivered it. You can buy it from shops and stuff. Like they sell it at garages outside, coal.
But you, I mean,
and also this is in the 60s, you can easily get it.
Well, I mean, I guess coal. Okay, sorry. No, I was getting confused. I was like, is that charcoal briquettes? But I don't think that's the same thing.
No, it's not.
Like a barbecue. Anyway.
Well, anyway, back to Loretta. Lucille
explained.
Yeah,
it didn't cause a health issue. So then they're like, just keep eating it and it'll go away when you give birth. So don't worry about it.
She was so lovely explaining it, because she was just so kind and explained it so nicely, and basically saying, yeah, you've got your facts wrong about strawberry milk, but also, you know, she didn't shame her or anything, though. I think she could have been acting all shocked and made her feel awful, but she didn't. And then Trixie came to also see Loretta. And so when the baby was coming, Trixie was there, and she was relating to the coal eating, the compulsion and not being able to stop. There was this like scene that was just all, what's the word?
Yes.
It wasn't foreshadowing, but it kind of had a.
Well, it was just steeped in Trixie's storyline too.
There was so many parallels between Loretta's story and Trixie's dealing with addiction. She says you feel bloody brilliant for a minute and then it begins again.
Yeah,
but she has the baby. The baby didn't come out looking like a little chimney sweep,
which I was quite sad about.
But her husband offers Trixie a glass of sherry.
Yeah, and she takes it.
She takes it. And that's not, I mean, Trixie, when she was with Christopher, she sat and just held a glass of champagne in her hand.
I know.
So that she didn't offend him because she didn't want to drink it. So, I mean, she's turned down drinks before.
Yeah, but she downed it, didn't she?
She did.
She had a glass of alcohol in her horrible nightgown at the beginning of the episode. And then she says, oh, no, I'm on duty. And he's like, no, go on. Come on. It's like not even like that much. It's like barely anything. Because it was admittedly like a very small glass. And she was like, well, in that case. And then she takes a sip of it. And you can tell she's like, I'm doing it, but ooh. And then, but she thinks probably like, I'll just get away with it. You know, like it's not that big of a deal or whatever. And then Phyllis comes the next day and the husband is absolutely hungover like to a million,
and the baby said not annoyed at all that she's been like this baby overnight and the other kids just sitting there like, oh, he's waiting. The baby said, oh, I came out, it was such a state, like what
Well, and then the wife makes a comment to Phyllis like, oh yeah, like he started off this night of absolute insane binge drinking with Nurse Franklin because they both had a drink after the baby was born. And Phyllis, to her absolute immense credit, was like, oh, okay, you know, like complete poker face. And then she just asked, you know, like one other question, and then she was like, well, okay, and then she moved on. And then
she goes to confront Trixie.
Exactly.
And Trixie is very, very, very quick to be saying, I'm not a child or very high and mighty, but she very quickly changed after the front went down when she was like, are you going to report me? you know, so she knew she was in the wrong. She tried to she tried to double down, basically, but couldn't because she had done wrong.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, her being defensive absolutely tracked. I was like, yeah, there's no way someone's just going to I mean, I didn't think she would just immediately crumble. I was like, yeah, she was. She obviously doesn't want to be caught out.
I think I'm just a wimp. I just would immediately crumble.
Well, I always think, I always crumble even if I haven't done anything. I'm always like, wait, what? Wait, oh, I'm so sorry. You're like, what can I do? I'm like, well, you haven't actually done anything wrong.
And then I'd just cry. And then it just...
But I think with alcoholism, there's a lot of trying to hide it and...
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Sneaking so you can have a drink and there's a, it, there's so a whole dynamic.
Exactly. Yeah. And then at the best possible time that could ever happen, who comes to the front door? Knock, knock. Oh, Christopher Dockerill. That's what we need right now.
Yeah, exactly who you want to hear from your ex-boyfriend who oh, no.
I was like, stay away. She does, like, it's not doing her any good. Mm-mm. I mean, he does help her in the end, but I think she would have got there.
Yes.
Look, I actually really did not have a bad impression of Christopher in this episode, but...
Well, I like the way that Nurse Crane had forewarned him as well, saying what she does need is a friend.
Yeah, because I do kind of think he was hoping to get back with her. I even thought he was kind of hoping to get back with her even later on when he was actually being nice, but I do think he was like, well, wait a minute, could we actually get back together? Because he even makes a comment about like, oh, I still love you. Like, none of that disappeared. And you know, so I mean, he was being a nice guy, but he also...
Is he being a nice guy, though? Because he's obviously... Trixie asks after Alexandra and he says she's doing really well, like she's, but if he's gone back to his wife,
well, we need to just
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Discuss this a little bit more because I actually have some questions. So Alexandra's doing better. That's great. I'm very, very happy to hear that.
Alexandra.
But there's two references to Christopher's marriage, ex-wife, whatever, that make me think, is he really divorced? Because they say something about how, like, Phyllis says, you know, she, like, Trixie doesn't need, like, her, this is not what she says, but she's like, Trixie basically doesn't need her ex-boyfriend, especially her ex-boyfriend who's still married. And I was like, wait a minute, this man is still married? What the heck? Like, are they?
I thought that was weird. I didn't know if they, like, didn't get the, you know, when sometimes with this discrepancies in the writing and stuff, and you're like, oh, they said he was divorced, but actually then in the next storyline, it's like, oh, actually he's still married. Do you know what I mean? You know, when they kind of miss that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just thought, is this a way where the writers just didn't spell it out? So then they had some wiggle room. So then they kind of wrote, and then, you know, basically what you just said. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, this is so confusing. And then he says something later about them, like, I, you know, like being together. And she's like, no, I really don't think that's a good idea, like, for a lot of reasons. But I just thought, what are we playing at? Like, also, like, the thing is, I did kind of, like I said earlier, like, I did kind of get the vibe that he was trying to maybe get back with her, even when he then realized, like, that's not going to happen. Like, I can't do that. And if I want anything to do with her, I just have to be, like, a friendly person. But at the same time, I was like, Christopher, like, you can't get back together. The whole point of this is that you being separated is what's making it work. Like, you had an intractable problem in your relationship, which is why you broke up. Also, I will say, like, I didn't think of it before, but I'm just thinking of it now. I did think it was weird that Alexandra, the reason why they got...
Alexandra,
the reason why they broke up in the first place, not to, like, put that on her, but I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, her welfare was why they broke up. Then was like, oh, I want to show my thing to Trixie.
Same.
And I was like, why would this child want to do that? Like, she clearly is having mental issues because, and again, I don't mean it insensitively.
Yeah, but I thought they were trying to intimate that Brenda, or Moira, not Brenda, sorry.
Moira,
Moira was just trying to make her life I think they were trying to intimate that Moira was kind of getting in Alexandra's head about Trixie.
But when Alexandra saw a therapist, one of the kind of conditions was that she didn't have to see Trixie if she didn't want to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Also, I just need to shout out the fact that Jen just dropped the word intractable into a just.
Well, I wasn't shocked, Jet Bex, because I don't underestimate her intellect, but you know, you carry on.
I'm way smarter than I seem. That's the charm of me right there.
Oh, it didn't even faze me, Jen. That's how highly I think of you.
Yeah, it just blew right past you right there. Yes.
Yeah.
But talking about Trixie, I do need to, like, this is back at the start when, and I don't know if this would have been a deleted scene for you, but they're all sat around this is nothing to do with her battle with addiction. It kind of is to do with their breakup. They're all sat around the table and they're talking about what their plans are for Friday night.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a deleted scene. Yeah. Yeah.
And when they ask Trixie what plans Sister Julianne asked Trixie, and she kind of has to make up all these things. And I just thought, this is the most awkward situation because Trixie doesn't have any plans. And I just hate being in that situation where somebody asks you a question and you just don't really. It's like when everybody asks, like, oh, what's new with you these days? And I'm just like, I'm just bumbling along.
Do you ever wish that
she said
she was
going to empty a nylon drawer? And just one second, I just wrote here. When they was asking about free time, like, I'm like, we've just cycled 65 miles around Poplar. I'll be bloody asleep after tea. I do have to say, though, can we just do a shout out really quick about this before you go into this, about Nurse Crane? She was going to meet with her Spanish pals for some Iberian snacks. And I was like, Nurse Crane. So sorry, carry on.
No, I was just going to say, like, to your point, Bex, do you ever wish, and I definitely have this because I feel like you and I have this in common, like Alex is much more extroverted, but when I have those kind of situations, I just wish I could literally just say skip. Like,
yes.
You know, like you do in a board game or something like that, or like in a whatever, it's just like skip. Like, I don't want to explain myself. I don't want to do this part, or like, I just want to skip to the next thing because I don't want to do the activity we're about to do or something like that.
I feel like I think I'm at a disadvantage being so extroverted because I genuinely don't feel awkward, and it's awful for other people because I say really awkward things and I make other people feel awkward. I don't mean to. Like, my physio was like, oh, yeah, you're doing really well. You don't need to see me for a while because obviously you're doing really well. And I was like, are you breaking up with me? And he's like this young 21-year-old lad, and he looked like he wanted to cry. Like, I just looked so scared of me. And I just say stuff. And I just feel like I'm the exact opposite. Like, I make other people feel awkward with my weird stuff I say, but I don't care. And I'm just like, honestly, when I said it to him, I genuinely was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Like, you know. So, you know, count yourself lucky you're the ones feeling awkward rather than
terrible. My mom is just like you, Al, because she will, like, love to talk to people in, like, so many situations that are not expressly social. And when I tell you that, like, okay, like, here's the classic Laura, right? We were shopping for my sister's wedding. And when I say we were shopping for it, what I meant is that we were shopping for our outfits to it. So my mom had to get, like, quote, mother of the bride dress. And then I was kind of maid of honor, but not officially because it wasn't that kind of a wedding. So we were at the mall and we went into the store, and she got this really beautiful, like, silk top that she was going to wear with, like, over a dress that she had ultimately is what we decided. And, but the, you know, the lady was like giving her all these options and like talking to her. And then my mom was like, this is what we're buying it for. And my sister lives here. And then this is my other daughter. She came with me because she's in Charlotte now, and blah, 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 blah. And it just goes on and on. And then by the end of the meeting, it wasn't a meeting. It was literally just my mom went in there to shop. Okay. And then at the end, she bought the thing, and then my mom goes, oh my god, and like, and grabs this woman and hugs her. And I do think that the woman was okay with being hugged, but like, she didn't look like she was like, oh, you know, like that. But at the same time, I don't think she was thinking that a hug was going to be where they were going in this interaction. And I said to my mom, I was like, and I kind of started joking, I was like, mom, like, you have to, like, ask people if they want to be hugged, or like, you know, like, are you, I'm like, are you okay with her hugging you? Because, you know, you can say no and everything. And she was like, no, she's so sweet, it's okay. But I was just like, my mom. So anyways, yeah,
I will say that would not happen from me.
You're not a hugger.
Also, by the way, you two, you know what you need to say when people are like, oh, have you been up to anything good recently? You'd be like, yeah, I've got a really good podcast about called Midwife. You should listen to it. That's your go-to line.
Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter, Threads, everything. Yeah,
I will say, whenever my mum sees you, Alex, I say to my mum, don't hug Alex. She doesn't like being hugged. And she does it every time.
She does. I don't mind. Like, it's not like I'm like totally, I just look really uncomfortable.
You just, like, it's not
innate in me.
You don't have to defend yourself, Alex. It's a normal thing. It's not everybody is.
Yeah, okay. I just hug you no matter.
But you
what,
are because... a hugger with your daughter. It's not like you're a weird.
Yeah, you're very, very appropriately affectionate, I think.
Well, thanks. Right, what are we talking about?
Trixie and Christopher and them breaking up. And
yeah, so you had your other questions. So have you done them all?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I just was like, what's going on with this marriage, my dude? Like, why are you back here? Leave her alone. I know you're sad, but you don't go back. Come on.
He was good, though, in facilitating her
he was.
Rehab journey.
Yeah, but I think if he hadn't have driven her to the meeting, Nurse Crane would have driven her to the meeting. So she would have got there.
Well, Phyllis she literally offered.
Yeah. She didn't need Christopher coming back, playing with her emotions.
Yeah.
Nurse Crane could have handled it.
But there was the scene on the bench where he was like, she was like, I'm not asking for help. And he was like, but you need it. And she was like, yes, I do. Thank you for letting me say that. And I thought, well, you could have said it anyway. But yeah.
Yeah. She would have said it to Phyllis.
She did try and go, didn't she? And then took the bus. Yeah. She was like, oh, the bus is part of my routine. But then she couldn't do it. And then obviously Christopher has dropped her off the second time.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the point where we see that her, like before when she's had difficulty with alcohol, it's always been that she's at the end of the night when the girls are getting together, she's always the first one to have a drink. And
yeah.
Whereas I don't think we've seen before where she comes back and she's got a bottle of vodka in a handbag and she sits in the bathroom and just downs vodka.
Oh, that was so
sad. I was
so
quite impressed with how small the bottle of vodka was. Like, I thought she'd just gone for, but I suppose that's because she's trying to conceal it, isn't she? She's
yeah.
Bring like a massive that's liter like a bottle.
Yeah, they're never thinking, oh, value for money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Phyllis. So there was a scene with Phyllis after that. So she's gone to the AA meeting and she says, Phyllis, I am sorry. And Phyllis was so lovely. And she was like, well, you don't need to be sorry. She was like, well, yeah, I do need to be sorry because, you know, I'm not going to be here in the morning. I need to go and get myself sorted out. And then Phyllis says, what, do you know the Bible phrase she says?
No, I don't.
But
I didn't
basically
know it
means
she
translates it and she says, you can start afresh in the morning and you can. I promise you. She was so loving, so supportive, so absolutely bloody brilliant.
I know.
Well, this week's episode, I felt, was just about women supporting women because you had Phyllis supporting Trixie, you had Mumtaz supporting Parveen, and you also had Sheila supporting Sister Monica Joan.
Yeah.
Oh, and seamless
can
transition
I say
alert.
One more thing on the Trixie storyline really quick.
Yeah.
Okay,
Sister Julianne was a bit salty with Trixie because Trixie was like, I really need to go somewhere. She was like, well, if you weren't going to say that yourself, I was going to make you. You're getting 6 months leave, but you go with our love and our prayers. And I thought, oh.
You know what? She was, but at the same time, I don't think you're not saying this, but I appreciated that because honestly, I mean,
well, she's
oh
got
my
a
God.
Patience
like,
to look after, isn't she? Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, come on. Yeah, like you can't be drunk or you can't be drinking while you're in that position. It's just, no, it's not working. Not while you're, I appreciated that she handled it with so much seriousness. But then to me, when Sister Julianne came around and she basically, you know, like said, like put her, you know, I don't remember how it started, but anyway, she like basically stood next to Trixie and Trixie took her hand and then she basically just fell into Sister Julianne and just started crying and they had this really sweet moment. And I think Sister Julianne was very caught off guard.
Yeah.
But it was this really emotional moment where she just kind of broke down and, oh, really? I was already sobbing. Girls, obviously. No surprise. It just got me. Also, you know what else I'm grateful that Trixie said? Well, she was like, Phyllis, I'm really sorry I put you in the position that I did because you knew and you didn't say anything and then that made you be at risk as well. And it is important to take those kind of things seriously, you know? And so, I was really brokenhearted about it. But it worked out, I guess.
Should we go on to Sister Monica Joan? And can we talk about the sewing? Bex, I thought you'd really appreciate that. I love the fact that Nurse Crane was saying her and Valerie are heathens while sewing as well.
Because they were all doing that embroidery.
Yeah, everybody was sat around doing tapestry. And that is literally me at the moment.
I was there last weekend. It looks so good. She's very good.
Yeah, she's really, really good, you guys. Really good.
I mean, I would have happily joined them in that sewing circle.
Even though you're a heathen.
Even though I'm a heathen. Yeah.
So this is where we see Sister Monica Joan trying to get out of sewing. And they're like, you know, we're already behind kind of thing. She's like, I've got loads of needles in my room. And it's because she can't see properly.
She's using the sewing glass.
Yeah, from Fred's shed. And she was kind of just admonishing Fred
admonishing. That's not a word they normally use.
No. Now, I'm sorry to be the person that corrects people, but it's because when it people then listen and then correct us. So it's her magnifying glass that she's using. One day she sat out in the allotment and she leaves it on the bench.
Oh, yeah. Fred
then comes across it and he puts it away in his shed.
Yeah, she's admonishing him for taking the magnifying glass that's hers.
Yeah, but that's right. I thought you said that it was Fred's magnifying glass.
No, I did not. I said it was Fred's shed. Then you'll find a play it back. So anyway.
Rewind.
Fred was so good with her.
Yeah.
Oh, Fred is just lovely.
His patience for her is really, really.
I know, but also he did the right thing because he went to Sister Julianne.
Yes.
He then in turn went to Dr. Turner.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What did he diagnose her with?
Cataracts.
My mum's had the surgery for cataracts. She's just had both her eyes done.
Oh, my mom had both of her eyes done a few years ago. I took care of her during it. And actually, it wasn't
It's miracle work.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah. Oh, can I tell you guys something, though? When I went in with my mom to drop her off for the cataract surgery the first time, the young lady, not young lady, adult woman, but like young adult woman.
You sounded so old then.
The young lady who was doing my mother's surgery. I probably wasn't even that much older than her, but anyways. But she was talking about this.
Anyway.
Rude. I'm not going to say what I'm thinking, but rude. Okay. And anyways, so she was talking to my mom about it and she was very sweet. She was, you know, like trying to kind of, you know, make her feel good. She's like, listen, she's like, you know, we're going to do this eye first. Like, let me just confirm with you that that's what, you know, blah, 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 the whole thing. She's like, listen, this is incredibly routine. She's like, we're going to take great care of you. You'll be in and out, you know, that kind of thing. And my mom said something about, oh yes. Da, 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 da. And then the lady said two things. She said, one, in some countries in the world where they, you know, don't have the same healthcare infrastructure, they have basically like a mobile van that drives around and performs cataract surgeries on people. And then they circle back, you know, like a week later. So like half their time is the surgeries and then half their time is checking up on people who just had it kind of a thing. Cause it's very, you know, now they have a very like minimally invasive way to do it. And then the other thing was that they said that when they go into the surgery, the doctor has like a screen or a pair of goggles that are whatever, like, I don't know. But anyways, they blow up your eyeball so that it's the size of a basketball so that they can see like every teeny, teeny, tiny detail and do the surgery so precise because it's so big in their vision. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're not actually inflating it, Alex. Alex is looking like they've literally taken the eyeball out.
No, it wasn't. I was thinking, does she think they actually take the eyeball out and inflate it?
No. What I mean
that was my face. Like, no, they don't, Jen.
No, what I mean is that she's either like looking at a screen that is so big or she has a pair of like magnifying glasses. I don't know which, but she's has something where to her in her way of looking at it while she's doing the surgery, the eyeball looks like as big as a basketball.
It does. Eye surgery just boggles my mind because
I don't know how they do whatever it is that they do. All I just know is that it's like very routine, and my mom came out of it just fine. I'm sure your mom came out of
it. It's like a laser thing. Yeah, she was obviously it's changed her life, to be fair. She can actually see.
And I'll tell you what, this is so minor in comparison to the severity of cataracts, but I at my great age now have started to have to wear reading glasses. And if I could have a doctor just go boop boop and then
you technically could, Jen.
Yeah,
have laser eyes.
But is that LASIK? Is that what LASIK is?
Yeah.
But isn't that just for people who wear glasses or contacts all the time?
Yeah, I don't know that. Natural aging would qualify me. I'd have to
have a look into it.
I'm at the point where my sewing has tipped me over and I think I need to go and get glasses.
I think you've just got eye strain. I did
go and get an eye test and she said it's really, you're really marginal. And if you think you need them, and when I'm sewing, I think I do.
I think you need magnifying glasses, Bex. Like, I think you need reading glasses, basically, is what you need. Yeah, because the thing is, this, like, I same age as you, and I'm only like a year or two older than you, but I'm just saying, like, it's only been recently that this has started, but I already see my eyesight changing in that way where I'm like doing the thing where I'm like holding my phone like back and forth to see when the things will focus. And
you know, you just said the word focus. Let's get back to the podcast. So
I was on topic. I was talking about cataract surgery.
No, it is. It very much is. So basically, they actually managed to get Sister Monica Joan because Dr. Turner thinks it's cataracts, but obviously they want to get her to see a specialist.
Oh,
so
she goes to the hospital. She was really driving me crazy.
Well, do you know what? Maybe Sheila takes her because she thinks Sister Julianne's in a bad books because she's trying to get her to go to the hospital. So Sheila takes us, and she does the thing that's the kind of thing I do with my six-year-old. She's like, oh, there's a really lovely place where you can have, it's called the Black Kettle Cafe. And you can have a lovely piece of cake. You know, when you're like there, softly, softly catch your mother cake. You know what? We will go to hospital, but also afterwards we'll go to McDonald's. You know, when you're like...
like, we'll do the bad thing first and then we'll have a nice treat after and it'll make it all okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, Sheila was very Mary Poppins because she said to her when she's trying to get ready, she was like, spit spot.
She was.
Although, actually, I'll tell you what. So I'm not gonna intimate who this was, but a member of my family recently had a vision issue, and then another member of my family was talking to that family member about their vision issue, and the person with the vision issue, we'll say person A, was kind of behaving Sister Monica Jones style, you know, kind of like, oh, the tragedy, oh, the travesty, what am I meant to do, like blah blah blah, all this kind of thing. And person B basically said to person A, kind of what Sheila did, was like, well, if this is how you're gonna go, like, do we need to think about what we're gonna do when everything is not really working anymore? Like, is that something we need to plan for? Because I really am concerned about you. And it was like, all of a sudden it was like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Like, I, and when Sister Monica Joan got the thing from Sheila about learning Braille and using a walking stick and all of that kind of stuff, all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, yeah, let me rethink
that,
this.
That annoyed me, because the Braille books, I thought that'd be the catalyst to make her completely change her mind. It wasn't. It was Fred talking about the first woman in space. About God creating all of science. It was, yeah. But also God created science. And if you're rejecting God because you're rejected, like, it was absolutely ridiculous speech, but she took it on. And she's a very cerebral woman, so that just confused me. But obviously she was already turning, I think. You're right.
I thought it was a genius move of Sheila to... And also, you can't just Google Royal Institute for the Blind. Like, Sheila had to do some legwork here.
Yeah,
she did.
That, don't you?
I know. Also, like, I was like, how many books are honestly in Braille at this point? I mean, when was Braille invented? I hate to sound ignorant, but honestly, when was it? Oh, I don't know. I've just asked this question. I have no idea. But
we do this every week. We just sound. I was editing the other podcast where we're talking about the Commonwealth. We know nothing.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I know American Sign Language.
1821.
You know what? You know what? Call me out, because honestly, I thought Braille was way, way younger than that. Because the thing is, like we say, like ASL, you know, like American Sign Language, you know, obviously people use
that.
Yeah,
we have BSL.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. I appreciate that.
No, it's not the same.
Stupid,
American
but...
Sign Language is different to British Sign Language.
But, huh. Oh, anyways, I'm not going to say anymore. I know I sound stupid, but that just really surprises me.
Becky's looking really confused. I'm 100% on this, Bex.
I know, but it surprises me too, because why is it not just the same?
Why is American not the same as English language, to be fair? Why do we have to change the spellings on words?
Well, honestly, yeah, why
the program,
didn't we?
America.
Why didn't we just come together and just make a unified one thing of it for everybody?
Grey. I don't know.
That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you'd think that would be like a way that
because
that
if
could
I...
be like an advantage. You know what I mean? Like, if you know one, then you can talk to anybody across the whole world who has a hearing impairment, and you use that sign language.
Also, I can communicate with Jen, who's an American.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll be loads of similarities, but there is a difference between British Sign Language and American Sign Language.
But can you imagine if you had the power to learn one language that literally everybody who knew it could speak, like, the world over, and like that could just be a universe. I mean, like, I'm not saying that. Do you get what I mean? Like, wouldn't it just be so nice?
Esperanto. Do you remember they tried to do a language called Esperanto, Bex?
No.
Esperanto was a language that these politicians came up with. Oh, when was it? It was when I was little, I think. But
and they thought, oh, this is going to be the thing that unifies all humans, like one
language. Yeah, and it was like a mixture of like English. It was a constructed international auxiliary language. I think it was 1887. It was not 1987, but there was lots of talk about it when Europe was all going on.
And, okay.
It's like a mix of lots of different languages. And Esperanto, I just remember it being this big thing when Europe was here. It's like derived from Germanic, Greek, and Slavic languages with English thrown in there as well.
So, wait a minute. I'm just doing, when was sign language invented? The 17th century!
Yeah, so there's probably, you weren't around in the 17th
century. Wait a minute, hold up. The recorded history of sign language in Western societies starts in the 17th century as a visual language or method of communication, although references to forms of communication using hand gestures date back as far as 5th century BC Greece. I'm amazed. Well, you know what? I guess I am exactly as smart as I seem, because, oh man, gee whiz, what a dummy.
Well, I have questions now. So, Sister Monica Joan was so, because she screams at the surgeon, butchery.
I know, she's so mad at him.
And it's just because she thinks it's God's will that she should go blind.
Yeah, I mean, which, like, come on, I'm sorry.
They say, oh, she's not keen on medical intervention, but she was a midwife.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just suit the thing, isn't it? It's a suit.
Yeah, this storyline really kind of annoyed me, honestly. I mean,
so I like the way that Sheila was like, oh, I managed to get the doctor to keep her on his waiting list. Just because, like, doctors had that much power in those days, he'd be like, I'm not serving her, I'm not looking after her. But
yeah, I mean, I will say the only grace I really had for the storyline, because it did kind of annoy me, was that I thought, you know, truly when something happens to us, you know, health-wise or age or related to our aging or whatever else, it is really, really tough to process. I mean, obviously depending on who each of us are and like what it is specifically to us, but I mean, anything related to that, it can be really, really, you know, hard to kind of like, you know, just come to terms with it. So I gave her that, because I did feel for her in that way. But I don't know, just the thing that bothers me about Sister Monica Joan is that, like, even with all of this, she's just so mean to everybody who's trying to help her, and then she never acknowledges that she's like really a pain about it. And I'm like, can you just go back and say something to anybody about, like, I'm sorry, like, I know you were just looking out for me, but like, I was really scared, like, can you just like be patient with me while I'm processing my feelings?
Yeah, like, but she's obstinate. Like, we've heard that about from the books, we know that's what she was like.
I know, but it's just an annoying trait.
Well, yeah, tell me about it. My husband's the same.
I do find myself a lot going back to people like 1 or 2 days later being like, oh, I'm really sorry, I've just been really hormonal.
Well, that's fine, you say it, that's the point. I mean, even if it takes a day, like, you know, some of us have, you know, the ability, like, you know, and a few moments later, or even in the moment, or a day later, I mean, we all have different temperatures at different times depending on what it is, but she never says it. And it's like, apologize for once for just being annoying and hard to deal with and a pain, and people were looking out for you and trying to help you, and you were rude to all of them.
Not gonna happen.
No, I know it's not gonna happen, but I still just don't like it. I don't appreciate that behavior. But anyways.
Shall we do heroes and zeros?
Yes. Girls, I have my heroes and zeros. I wrote them down.
Let's start with
Jen. I wrote
them
down in advance. Let's start with Jen. I wrote them down in advance. Okay. I'm so proud of myself. Like, I really am so proud of myself. Okay. My zero is Sadiq for showing up with a pregnant 15-year-old second wife and no warning.
That was mine. Yeah.
Mom Taz. I mean, oh, I just was like, of all, like, I didn't really feel like there were any like true villains or anything in this episode. But when I thought about it, I was just like, you did that to your wife on purpose because you were a coward. Like, honestly, how rude and how disrespectful to your relationship with her. Like, even if you had to acquiesce to your family's wishes and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that, and you went ahead and slept with this woman and da 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 da. Like, I mean, come on. I just thought that was terrible of him. Like, honestly, like, husband jail for like at least a period of time. Okay, my hero, and I'm gonna go on a bit of just a quick thing about this. So I had a really long as heck week at work, and it was a really hard week at work, and people were really testing my patience at work. And one of the things that I kept hearing over and over again, both in my own mind and then like as I was talking to colleagues about the things we were all dealing with people we work with, our clients, is, you know, like, we have to help and support and, you know, provide resources and everything, but at the same time, people are allowed to do what they're going to do, and they have to decide to make a choice to behave a certain type of way, and like, either they're going to better their situation or they're not. And so that's on my mind like really heavily. And Trixie had an opportunity to either go one way or go another, and even Sister Monica Joan had an opportunity to go one way or go another, and so did Mom Taz, same thing. And each one of those women, I would say Trixie the most, and then Mom Taz the most, and then Sister Monica Joan kind of, because she was really, you know, like, helped along, but they made the right choices. Well, at least I'm going to say they made the right choices, and they chose to do the thing that will, you know, ultimately be the best for both their lives and the people around them. And it's hard to honestly step up and do the right thing, and especially when the right thing is the hard thing. And I just really gave it to each one of those women for doing it, and not just kind of sinking further into, you know, a place that's going to lead only to just more sadness and ruin. So I know that's a bit of a very clear cut one, but I was really grateful that they made good choices, and it's not easy in life to do that. So I wanted to shout it out. And we all have free will. So you know what? We have to remember that. And sometimes it is on us, and responsibility comes with a price, but it's a price worth paying. Well, anyway, okay. I've got off my high horse. I appreciate you all listening.
So who was the hero? Just everyone, all the women.
The women who made the tough choices.
Okay. So you've stolen literally any, all of our.
Well, mine was very like esoteric. So it's not as, it's fine. I mean, you still can have any hero you want.
Who's going next, Bex, me or you?
You go. Have you got yours?
Yeah. My
you
hero.
You never go last, Bex. This is such a switch
up
for us.
I know. She says saltily. My hero is Nurse Crane.
Good choice.
She's an absolute boss. I don't think I really need to explain it. She was absolutely amazing. So supportive, so amazing. Love her. Zero is Mumtaz's family.
Oh.
I was going to do, but I'm going to go with them because they had chance to warn her. They had a chance to actually say to her, look, you know, I know it might be difficult for you, but we're going to get your cousin, 15-year-old cousin, to marry to your husband of however many years. You know, awful. Anyway, there you go.
And Hero?
Zero?
Zero was Mumtaz's family. Bex!
Oh, stop
listening to me at all.
I promise I did listen. Okay. My zero is going to be Christopher.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Because he did ultimately help Trixie, I know, but she would have got that support from Phyllis because Phyllis was dealing with it. Like, she was aware of what was going on. She gave Christopher the heads up. I just thought, you're not helping the situation here. If he has gone back to his ex-wife, he's basically betraying his ex-wife. Current wife, we don't know. Alexandra is showing signs of improvement, but now he's basically returning to the things that has caused all of the issues in the first place because he's just putting himself first instead of everybody else.
Yeah.
Classic. So he's my zero, capital zero, zeros. And then my hero is going to be, Trixie, Nurse Crane.
Fred?
Oh, yeah, Fred is a good Fred. One. You love to call out Fred for his good works.
Because Fred just, and also just the way he dealt with, not dealt with her, because that sounds wrong, but he was just very patient with Sister Monica Joan.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that. And I just
I just didn't choose Fred because I thought I'd leave it for you.
Thank you.
Genuinely. Now, I've just got a few things to do before the end. A few bit of correspondence. So obviously, do you remember I said that I'd had a printout and forgot stuff and couldn't find it at the listener special? So Becky has tweeted on, not the our Becky,
because I
actually does any work to do with the Columbia.
Wow, Raker over the coals. Okay.
No. So Becky has tweeted us. No, Becky doesn't have Twitter, do you, Bex?
No.
She said, I am still desperate to know this. And it's a question she sent ages ago. And I did have it in our files and totally didn't mention it because I couldn't find it. So it says, question for you. What decade would you have liked or think you would have suited to work in as an Anarton midwife? So which decade do we think? Do we think the 50s, the 60s, 70s?
Oh, man. Probably. Well, my instant gut reaction was like, this decade, you know what I mean? But then I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't count because they're not still there. But I only say this decade because I just, there's so much about the past that genuinely gives me trepidation to like think about really dealing with in terms of like the stuff they have to do.
Couldn't have been one of the early decades. Did it start in the 50s or the early 60s? 50s. I couldn't have done it, and I'll tell you why. Enemas. Would not want to be involved with that. Newspaper on the mattress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also those rubber sheets that they also used and then reused. So someone's washing that.
Well,
my issue is I couldn't be a midwife at all. Like, I'd just be the world's worst. I wouldn't get through training. I wouldn't be able to get through one birth. It'd just be absolutely awful. So I'd have to be something like an administrator. I'd be like Sheila's receptionist role in the doctors.
I'll give myself way more credit than I deserve and say I would go for like the mid 60s to the 70s, because
you were our midwife, both of us.
Yeah. Because I think, I mean, obviously I have the perspective of history in terms of making a decision, but I think I would be willing to do it in a time where women were starting to get more autonomy and more rights in society, especially for their own bodies and their own health. A la the pill, like medical intervention, you know, like laws being passed that gave them more, you know, like legal rights and things like that.
I'd let unmarried mothers do it at all. I'd be there as a receptionist, like, get in.
I'd be like, you know, have fun. So yeah, so I'm going to go for that one. But it's tough, honestly. I mean, I'll tell you what I absolutely could not do, and I have the utmost respect for, is young Sister Monica Joan in real life, who's literally doing midwifery in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and during the Blitz, and during
the war.
You know, World War II, and all of that. I'm like, I could never, no matter what I think about myself or credit I'll give myself, I'm like, oh my God, don't put me there. Like, those women are truly, like, they're more than Marines. They're more than the toughest of the tough. Like, the things they would see and deal with, oh my God, just absolute, like, unreal. So, yeah.
And I think I'm with Alex, I'd be the receptionist, because even now at work, sometimes I do help out on reception when needed, and I love it.
She texted me the other day and she was like, it was Brill.
So you guys would be like the Sheila, and then I would be like, what is it, the nurse, sister nurse, or mother sister or something? What's the job that Jenny Lee gets that Phyllis has? Like, head sister or something?
Yeah.
I'd be that one, I guess, then. Yeah.
Now, we've also
I would like to boss people around, so yeah.
We've also had a recommendation from Angela Thompson, who says she watched The Calendar Girls yesterday, the film, and she said there was loads of Call the Midwife cast members in it, so we need to watch that and recommend it to other people.
Wait a minute, say what it is.
The Calendar Girls. It's about WI women who do a naked calendar. It's sold loads of copies and made loads of money.
I have a story about this because my mum is in the WI. My mum's WI came out and their theme for the year, instead of the Calendar Girls, they were the Colander Girls. And what they did was they wore colanders like bras.
Oh my God.
They dressed all in black. They weren't, it wasn't literally.
Oh right, but I was about to say.
No, they were clothes. And then they all just had colanders.
As a bra.
Yeah.
You can edit this. No, I like it.
Oh, I
like
think it. This is good. That is so funny. Oh my God. I love it. Colander. I love it.
So yeah, we'll watch that. Thank you, Angela. Now, otherwise.
Girls, okay.
Yeah. Now, we've also got Barbara Lim. Hello, Barbara. We've had a lot from Barbara. Who says, that sounded awful. We've had a lot from Barbara. Like loads of trouble. I mean, we've had loads of Ace stuff from Barbara. It's just the way I said it then. We've had a lot from Barbara. I'm going to get a restraining on. No, she's great. She said about, you know, we had the peanut butter. She says she can only eat peanut butter from a spoon with butter. And I was like, what, with butter? Are you supposed to have butter on it too? And she's like, yeah, you're supposed to have butter with peanut butter as well. Is this a thing, Jen?
Never say never, but I've never heard of eating peanut butter and butter like that, especially by this.
I'm going to try it. Well, we're trying it. Now, Barbara also says, with regard to Linda and Selwyn, the baby hot water bottle, etc. The bottle was filled hours before the baby was born. Surely it would have cooled at least a bit, apparently.
Well, oh, thank goodness. Good, it would have scalded that baby.
Well, exactly. Good, so that explains that away.
That's
so
a good
thank
point.
You very much, Barbara. Yeah. And we don't want a restraining order, right? Is she great? I think I'm just tired and I just
did
said
you,
it really weirdly.
Just a little bit of butter on the spoon and then the peanut butter.
I think so, yeah.
Because she didn't mention any bread or anything. She's like, literally.
No.
Just...
I sent another comment on Facebook and was like, what, on bread? And she was like, yeah.
Oh, so you like
on bread.
So you like buttered the bread
first. No, she doesn't like it with bread. She likes it on a spoon, like you do. So try it. Basically, we're all going to try it.
Okay.
We're not going to do it on the podcast. We've done it now. Right, ladies.
Yes.
So next week we are recording Series 7, Episode 5. So if you would like to watch it and then listen to our podcast, that would be fantastico. I've said it again, fantastico. Where's that come from? Thank you so much for listening. In the meantime, follow us all on social media. MeCallMidwife@gmail.com, Threads, Instagram, X,
you know
Facebook.
It all.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.